Welcome to the Thriving Artist Podcast, a feature of the Clark Ewlings Fund for Visual Artists. The Clark Ewlings Fund exists to provide training, introductions, and funding for working artists to turn working artists into thriving artists. A special announcement at the top of our show, applications are open in the month of September for the Business Accelerator Fellowship Program of the Clark Ewlings Fund. The fellowship includes full tuition to a year-long series of art business workshops led by art industry and business experts. The Clark Ewlings Fund transforms working artists into thriving artists by providing the essential career acceleration and business savvy for a self-sustaining career. Business Accelerator Fellows also receive valuable PR and industry introductions, mentoring, and a modern business toolkit. These are the advantages any entrepreneur needs. So if you're a visual artist or know one legally permitted to work in the U.S. who's making some money from your art but needs to take it to the next level, visit clarkewlingsfund.org and click Business Accelerator. That's clarkewlingsfund.org. You only have until the end of September to get your application in, so make this the turning point in your career. Now let's get going with our show. I'm Daniel Degree, your host. Our guest today is Elizabeth Corkery. Elizabeth is a large-scale installation artist and the founder of Print Club Limited, a limited edition printmaking company. Her most recent and ambitious project to date is a spatially transformative sculptural exhibition called Ruined Sequence at Tower Hill Botanic Gardens, opening October 8th. The project is funded by the Clark Ewlings Fund Business Accelerator Program, which I'll mention again a bit later. Elizabeth, welcome to the show. Can you take a minute to tell us a little bit more in your own words about yourself and what you do for a living?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. So I'm, as you can hear, I'm originally from Australia, but I'm an Australian-US citizen and currently live in Providence, Rhode Island. I finished up grad school in May 2013 and have been working as a practicing artist since that point. And shortly after finishing grad school was also when I established Print Club. At the time, it was Print Club Boston, as that's where I was based. It's now Print Club Limited. And I've continued to keep my personal practice and Print Club activities in tandem for the last 3 years or so.
Now, you're still preparing for your CHF-funded project, Ruined Sequence. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that is?
So this project's actually been a long time coming. I was contacted by Tower Hill about 18 months ago with an invitation to work with them in some capacity. And I had done a project back in 2014, actually in Glasgow, that was focused on one of their very famous glass houses in their botanic gardens. So when I got the invite from Tower Hill, I knew I wanted to work, you know, with one of their glass houses that they have in the gardens. And so I immediately knew that it wouldn't be works on paper, as it's a very, you know, wet environment in there. So started conceiving of how I might make a body of work that was more sculpturally based, that could be presented alongside the plants. So I'm quite fascinated with the idea of how glass houses, particularly when they first grew in popularity during the Victorian era in the UK, were populated with plants that had been gathered from all corners of the world. I think growing up in Australia, which has so much unique plant life, you know, a lot of those plants traveled back to the UK and filled a lot of the glass houses that were around at the time. And so I'm enjoying that idea of travel and of accumulation and eventual display. And so actually all the pieces that will be on show at Tower Hill have either been created during a recent stint in the UK, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit, and some of which were made in the US. So there was that aspect of travel that the pieces actually had that are now going to be open to the public in a couple of weeks inside the greenhouse.
Well, so what has been the greatest challenge or learning experience while working on this project?
Well, I have a background in printmaking, and so I have made some freestanding work in the past, but this was really my first foray into a completely new series of work that was sculpturally based rather than starting from print as the medium. There is some silkscreen elements in the pieces that have ended up in the show, but they are on the surfaces of three-dimensional sculptural objects. So kind of navigating the materiality of the pieces and how I wanted to construct them was probably the most challenging. And also the fact that I was making them during a residency in London and having to have some foresight about how they were going to travel back to the US. So thinking about their weight and their resilience in terms of you know, being boxed up and shipped across the Atlantic. There were material challenges, material and logistical challenges, I think, were the main ones.
Well, I think also probably some challenges dealing with the extreme temperatures and the moisture that you mentioned earlier, sort of in the greenhouse environment. How did you deal with those aspects of it?
So all the work has been very heavily shellacked and waterproofed, and so they should stand up to the hosing down that the plants have. It's not actually a hugely humid greenhouse as far as some of them go. It's not a tropical environment. The plants actually all live outside during the summer. Just to clarify, this is a botanic garden just outside Boston, so it's in Massachusetts. The plants can live outside when it's sunny. They just get moved in for the winter, so they don't necessarily need to be kept in an incredibly sort of tropical environment as you might otherwise expect from greenhouses. So hopefully the work holds up. It's going to be staying in there through the duration of the season, so until May next year. So I'll be checking in on them periodically to be sure that they are standing up to the elements.
Well, you mentioned the logistics side of things, and of course, these are aspects of any fully fleshed out project. So let's ask you a sort of another project management question. You know, this is a show that is coming up that causes you to work with a committee. Is it the first time, and what are you learning from the collaboration, if so?
I've definitely had instances where I've needed to work with a number of different people in order to realize exhibitions or shows, but this one was quite different as I was working not only with the events coordinator for Tower Hill, but also with their director of horticulture in terms of the timing with which my pieces would be installed. So they're just in the middle now of moving the plants back inside after their summer outside. So the sort of pedestal supports that my sculptures will go on are getting moved in simultaneously with the plants, so that they don't have the appearance of being an add-on or an afterthought to the way that the plants have been composed in the groupings that they create. And the other thing, as I was saying, is the work's going to be in there for a number of months, so it's also taking into account the fact that the plants are going to grow around the work and around the stands that the work is on over that period too. So that's really still an unknown, and being relaxed about those unknown aspects is important too, and acknowledging that there's going to be some surprises over the period of its installation, which is sometimes hard for someone in with a printmaking background, as anyone who's in that medium can attest. It's a very ordered way of working, and you often need to have complete control over your environment and the way you're producing the work. So I've had to let go a little bit of the parts that I can't control and try and enjoy that aspect.
Yeah, it's a really profound point. When working in any project, there are variables, wild cards, if you will, that you can't really always even predict or manage. Of course, you know, effective projects try to predict and prepare for the logistics of what you can. So
exactly,
you know, you're hosting this exhibition in a greenhouse, and that's an unconventional locale, if you will. Are you interested in continuing to work in unconventional spaces? Is that a branding move or what?
I would like to be able to fluctuate between more traditional gallery spaces and unconventional spaces. I think that the context can really influence the type of work I want to make, and injecting something foreign into the gallery space is quite an exciting aspect, and similarly injecting something back into an otherwise the quote-unquote real world site. I think they both have their excitement, I would say, for me as an artist. This is really the most unconventional site I've worked in to date. I have traditionally worked in quite conventional gallery spaces up until this point, but my work has been very architecturally referential and also obviously heavily influenced by garden design over the last 2 or 3 years. So I would love the opportunity to have, you know, outdoor pieces eventually, but then also, yeah, still have that ability to fluctuate between conventional and unconventional sites.
Now, This is a Clark Hewlings Fund funded project. And what were the specific costs that were involved in the project that the Business Accelerator grant helped to defray?
The grant has helped with the fabrication of these pedestal supports and also the transport of those and some of the marketing materials that are being produced in tandem with the show. As I was saying, my background hasn't been in sculptural work. And so there's always not only the production of the work, but the building or the construction of what it's going to sit on, how it's going to be displayed. And given that the work had to be presented amongst plants, amongst living plants, there needed to be a constructed support for those. So I have actually a friend in Boston who built these really terrific sort of modular cube pieces that are open so the plants can, move between. They're not solid cubes, they're not solid boxes. They allow a movement between them, and they can also be stacked either, you could have a single one, two of them, three of them. So I've often in my work tried to find ways to have a modularity or a way of responding to the site as I'm there and as I'm installing. So anyway, there was a considerable cost having those built. It was beyond my skill set in carpentry, and they turned out really, really, really well. And then obviously the delivery of those from Boston was covered by the grant. And then I'll also be printing a marketing sort of information document that visitors can read while they are looking at the work.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize that a lot of the production of an art project are these costs, is really often prohibitive costs of transportation, other logistical costs, materials, just to put on a show, just to have an exhibit, etc. So, we like to fund and support artists at crucial and pivotal moments, we meaning the Clark Hewlings Fund. So in what way is this project actually pivotal or crucial to your career from a business standpoint?
Well, what I'm most excited about with this project is actually the expansion of the audience that's going to be viewing the work. As we were saying before, it's not a conventional art world or gallery site. And so it really is going to expand awareness and hopefully appreciation of my work to a group of people that would otherwise not necessarily have encountered it. So that kind of also speaks to why I think it's really important to have this information sort of printout document that can be a takeaway and can also be really illuminating about the work, because it may not necessarily be an art going public that is hopefully going to get something from seeing the work. So yeah, I think it's exciting to me to think that this can be really expansive for the audience of my practice. And I also think that it'll be visitors with really specific knowledge who will bring something probably that I hadn't even thought about to the pieces, taking into account whatever their backgrounds are. So that's why I'm really thrilled that I was able to have the opportunity to put this together.
Now, switching a little bit to sort of the planning of the exhibition, you did much of the preparation for Ruin Sequence at a residency in the UK. Can you tell us a bit about the residency?
Yes. So as I was saying, it had been a long time coming that I knew I had an opportunity to show at Tower Hill. And so when an opportunity came up to be involved in a program that was jointly run between the Slade School, which is University College London's art school, and the Camden Art Centre, which is a really prominent regional non-profit art gallery in London, I put together a proposal that had Tower Hill in mind. As I was saying, my interest in the development of the Victorian tradition of building glass houses, and then also the sort of picturesque tradition of building fake ruins in English gardens, were all sort of ideas that were bubbling around my head as to what I wanted to approach through the Tower Hill opportunity. So I put together a proposal for, it was called the London Summer Intensive, and it ran for a month over August. And prior to it starting, I was actually traveling around the UK and Scotland visiting specific English landscape gardens and stately homes through July and documenting those and having the opportunity to see them firsthand and walk around them and acquaint myself with their environments. And then over the course of the month of August, I was producing the first of these sculptural pieces that then were augmented by further pieces that I've made since getting home. But they were really, that period was really the time that I was able to experiment and nail down the process that I was going to use to make the different sculptures.
Well, how did the residency, how did you plan rather for the opening of your show, even though you were thousands of miles away? Weren't there some difficulties of not being on the ground?
Yeah, so I think that kind of harks back to my desire that I have maximum flexibility with the install of the pieces. So having everything be, you know, modular, having everything be able to be reconfigured depending on what is, you know, most appropriate when I started moving it into the glass houses. So I was making pieces that are all roughly table, you know, can sit on a tabletop. There's nothing huge. They're all, you know, within about 2 feet in any different direction. And so they could be easily, you know, boxed up and packed, and then also could be put on pedestals and displayed amongst, you know, amongst the plants in the greenhouse. So I was basically just trying to make as many discrete pieces as I could that could stand on their own, you know, not be too enormous that I couldn't move them around or have a flexibility about how they were displayed. So that those were kind of my main considerations.
Did you, just to clarify something, did you create any large portions of ruined sequence in London?
Oh yeah, yes, I did. Probably about a dozen of the pieces were made there, and then I would say another dozen have been made since coming home. So yeah, I would say about half of them were produced there, but the ones that were produced at home, their method of production was established in London. So not only did I make a lot of the pieces there, the way I figured out to make them was during that time, during the residency. And it was really, what was so fabulous about that opportunity was all the invited artists that they had that came and did studio visits with us. So I got to have lots of discussions with people at the various stages of making the work. So some people came and were able to respond and offer advice or, you know, react to what they were getting from the pieces. And so I had a lot of feedback as the making of them happened, which was really enriching for the work, I think.
Let's switch gears and talk a bit about sales and the sales aspect of it. So we've talked about sort of the project management side and exhibition planning. So I'm concerned about this. Many of your pieces for this show will be large and sculptural. So do you think about the saleability of these pieces when you're creating them? And if so, you know, what is your plan for, you know, economic sustainability with this?
So during grad school, my work really moved from being quite traditional printmaking pieces, works on paper, to being more environmental installation-based work, which was conceptually just where the work was going, and I was excited about that. And I really didn't care to give a huge amount of thought to what could be kind of sold or pulled apart from these bigger installations and sold off. And so actually that was what prompted my decision to start Print Club, because I really enjoy the act of screen printing and making prints on a regular basis. And as my personal work started getting more involved and more research and production heavy, I found that I wasn't actually printing as often as I would like. And the work was, as you say, quite large. And so, yeah, so Print Club, basically, it's a tangential sort of business model where I so far have designed all of the pieces that are available through the web store that I set up for it, and I hand print all of the pieces, but they are kept quite relatively small scale and accessibly priced. And that has in turn become more of the kind of commercial aspect of my work, more so than my, you know, my bigger kind of installation practice. I have sold pieces from those bigger works in the past, but it became a little problematic for me to get too hung up on whether there would be you know, pieces that could be sold or not sold from that work.
So there are issues, you know, when you sell pieces at the end of a show and they are sort of large and sculptural, there's some things having to do with the integrity of the art that you need to protect, are there not?
There are, and I've actually had, there was one piece from my thesis exhibition from my MFA that I sold, and I wanted to insist on, you know, delivering it and hanging it myself at, you know, at the buyer's home, just so that I could, yeah, be sure that it was, I knew kind of what kind of lighting it was going to, you know, whether there'd be troubles with fading or the, you know, natural light, and then also being sure it was sort of hung in a really secure, appropriate way. But yeah, you can't always have that control, certainly if it's heading off to a place that you can't accompany it to. But I definitely, you know, this work that's going into the greenhouse, as I said, there's going to be a bit of unpredictability about how it's going to survive the next 6 months. And so, yeah, that also makes it a little bit difficult to make the work available for sale, although I plan to make it available for sale. And I also am confident that it will survive the winter in the greenhouse. But those considerations are definitely what prompted my decision to have a more commercial print-based enterprise. And why I kind of keep those two as tandem pursuits.
Well, you know, I'm sure the greenhouse is not the little shop of horrors where the plants are going to devour everything in their path, including the art. I'm sure it will survive. But you know, I can sense the nervousness, but also the conviction that it's going to make it. So it's kind of a neat challenge, yeah. And a story in itself. But you know, a traditional working artist needs to track, and of course we're big advocates of this at the Clark Healings Fund, and we actually teach through our Business Accelerator program how to do this properly and provide tool sets to do it. But a traditional artist, let's say you're a painter, or you're doing, you know, you have obviously a painting you can carry, it's not in the jungle, you can carry it off under your arm, or a sculpture. When that work sells, we encourage people to do one, relationship management, you know, sort of tracking who bought the art, where it goes, even potentially tracking, though it may be challenging, tracking the secondary market, you know, where did it get sold after that, where is it being auctioned, inventory tracking, where is your art sitting now, which galleries have it, which museums have it, which collectors have it, what's still in the studio, and sort of also the financial and budgeting and contract side of things. So, you know, like tracking what your contract says with a given gallery, or, you know, the receipts. So I'm curious, when you have these big pieces, you know, are you tracking them? Are you doing something to track your work in general? What is your strategy for tracking your artwork, whether it's the large stuff or the small stuff?
Well, a lot of it can obviously be done online, and the previous purchases of the work I keep in regular contact with and update them when I have new pieces or new exhibitions. And so I, you know, keep a really rigorous check on my mailing list and who I'm in touch with. And as far as the secondary market goes, I don't really know if I'm there yet career-wise, whether there would be one. I'm not currently represented by a gallery, so I tend to have specific contracts and insurance policies with each site as they come up that I'm showing my work. I don't have, you know, a continued relationship with any specific, you know, gallery at the moment. Yeah, so I just do a lot of it online, and it's all, you know, I send out newsletters to my mailing list, and I also keep in specific contact with collectors who've bought bigger pieces so that they know what I'm up to. And I found through the program, through the workshop series so far, that a lot of the business related strategy and marketing that I was already doing for Print Club, because I could so easily view that as a business, because it is one, just discovering how applicable a lot of those strategies would be for promoting my personal work as well. And so that's definitely a takeaway that I'll be sort of moving with and putting some of those strategies into place when I'm promoting this show and sharing imagery of this work, of this new work.
Well, you know, you can move to the head of the class. As you said, you know, ladies and gentlemen, Elizabeth is one of the 2016 Accelerator Program Fellows. She's still engaged in our year-long fellowship. And of course, you're singing our song in so many of these areas. I mean, you're like, yes, I'm tracking. I have independent tracking, not somebody else tracking it, but not some gallery somewhere. I have independent tracking of who buys my work, and I stay in contact with them. And So thank you for that, because, you know, this is what we're trying to do. And so a reminder to our audience, if you know a working visual artist that's doing okay, but really wants to accelerate the business side of their career, encourage them to apply in the month of September to the Business Accelerator Fellowship Program of the Clark Ewlings Fund. Now, participants receive full tuition to a year-long series of art business workshops that provide the essential business training and professional career savvy to be not just an artist, but a thriving art entrepreneur. For more information about this and to complete an application, which you must do this month of September, visit clarkewlingsfund.org and click Business Accelerator. That's clarkewlingsfund.org. Now is the turning point in your career. So, Elizabeth, I want to ask you a little bit about sort of the commercial art business side of things. So, can you tell us a little bit more about why you started Print Club Limited?
Printmaking obviously has a rich history in being a more accessible art form for purchasing and for disseminating. So it's, you know, because you can make things in multiple, you can in turn keep a lower price point and there can be more of them. You can reach a wider, you know, base of potential collectors. And so, as I was saying before, I so much enjoy the process of screen printing, and I just didn't feel at the time like it was a regular part of my, you know, art routine, for want of a better word. And so I was also very inspired by how easy it's become to set up a really nice looking online store these days and market yourself online, that it seemed like, you know, something that might resonate. And I've been met with quite a lot of enthusiasm about the work. The next sort of phase for Print Club, now that the last few series of prints have all been my own designs, is that I'm actually moving into inviting specific artists to do collaborative editions with me. So it will be their designs and we'll work together to realize them as screen prints. There's a lot of people, I mean, my ambition is to invite people that haven't necessarily done any printmaking themselves and whose work isn't ordinarily print-based, but kind of work with each other to find out how it might translate in an interesting way into that medium. So I, have a really stellar group of artists lined up who I'll be working with over the next 9 to 12 months. And I'm also lucky enough to have moved to a city in Providence where I have access to a, you know, communal print facility. Anyone that's done printmaking at the university level can attest that the moment that you graduate and the facilities just get pulled away from you, print is a very hard medium to continue without access to that kind of equipment. So to live in a place where I can actually make the work in a really well set up print shop makes it all possible too.
Now, can you give us the website address where our listeners can go and visit the Print Club?
Yeah, it's www.jointheprintclub.com.
That's excellent. And I want to ask you, mm-hmm. you know, as you mentioned, collaborating with other artists to create original series within the Print Club. So it's not just your work. There's a collaboration going on here. What is the greatest challenge and reward, the two sides of the coin, in working with fellow artists in this way?
The reward is definitely that it stretches my skills. When I'm designing and printing my own pieces, you can tend to fall into the trap of making what you already know that you can do and, you know, going through the motions a little bit with strategies you've used in the past and that you know you can use again. And when people come with their own specific ideas of how they would like something to look or the process that they would like to experiment with, it can, you know, throw me off kilter in a good way. And I start to think of ways to kind of problem solve or rise to the occasion on that front. So I've, you know, on a skill level, having that kind of crossover, it's enriched my own work by being stretched through doing print club-based projects. The challenges, I would say, is probably not living anywhere that any of the artists live. So it's a lot of email communication, and when you're working in a visual medium, trying to communicate colors via JPEGs or, you know, trying to get more detailed feedback across can sometimes be a little tricky, and you just wish that you could sit in the studio together and look at the pieces in person. So navigating the distance between me and the other artists can be a little challenging.
But is it intrinsically different working with fellow artists than, say, working with a review panel?
I think we just get, you know, I understand when something needs to be really specifically done, and we just can communicate in quite a similar way. And we know when something that someone else might think of as minutia really is crucial. And an artist, you know, a fellow artist gets when something just has to be a certain way.
So there's kind of a shared culture and a shared language of perspective. I wonder, you kind of mentioned the impact earlier on the art of working collaboratively, but does managing a commercial art venture, does that impact your career as a fine artist in some way?
Yeah, I mean, it does in the sense that I'm literally splitting my time a lot of the time. And I'm finding that whenever you're running a small business, you could devote as many hours to it as there are hours in a day. You know, you could just be tinkering with the website or approaching different bloggers or editors, or, you know, there's always some other thing you could be doing, and you could just have it become a 24/7 thing. But there are times when my personal work has to kind of take the fore, and that's also why I found it really beneficial to do residency periods. And I've managed to do at least one or two for the last 3 years since graduating, having that really considered time where it's just about that personal work is helpful. And then it allows me to then, when I get back from it, you know, kind of switch gears if I need to. I think, though, as I said before, like, the two can feed each other, and a lot that I've learned about marketing and about communicating the work online can be used to help promote my personal work as well. So that if I can frame it right in my own head, the two can be mutually beneficial. And if it's a day where I feel like I've devoted a huge amount of time to one or the other, I need to kind of take a step back and just reorganize, you know, which I want to do at any one time.
So you mentioned, you used the phrase, I think, switching gears. You know, is it a fundamentally different mindset running a commercial art business versus a fine art business?
I have found it to have a few differences. And I mean, a lot of the ways, the voice that I've kind of cultivated for Print Club in its all its online iterations is a specific one to how I want to communicate that work and who I want to reach with regards to that work. And then for my own practice, I feel like I'm probably has a slightly different audience. And so like to consider the ways that I present myself to that audience. Yes, I find it, I mean, probably the fact that I can't split them up probably is a testament to the amount of similarities there are, but I don't ever feel like they're one and the same. They do still require some specific strategies for each of them. I'm still kind of figuring out, as I said, how some of those marketing strategies could actually live in, you know, for my own work as well. But that's the work in progress.
Well, it's an interesting problem and challenge to solve. And from working with you in our Accelerator Program Fellowship, I have every confidence that you will. Now, you've spent, along those lines, 2 years as an art buyer at an advertising agency. And has that taught you anything about the commercial art business that's become beneficial in this venture?
Well, you know, I actually think the biggest thing that came out of working in a large ad agency is just knowing how to be constantly in email contact with people, knowing how to set up meetings, knowing how to cold call people, cold email people, just the communication that's required from working in that environment has definitely impacted how I'm able to present myself online or in person. So that was definitely beneficial. I think, so an art buyer is basically, some agencies call them art producers. They basically produce any still photography that's going to be used in advertising, whether it be magazines or billboards or on the sides of buses. So we were working directly with commercial photographers and hiring commercial photographers and production companies to make print ads. And so actually, I think that a lot of commercial photographers are doing exactly what it is I was just talking about, where they have a commercial, there's a commercial side to their work, which often helps to fund more personal projects that they are also working on. They're doing that tandem, you know, movement that I am also doing, where a similar skill set is used, but for different ends, and one helps support the other.
So I want to kind of transition from that. And the reason I asked the question about the future of Print Club and the commercial side, Elizabeth, is I want to know also your business trajectory on the fine art side. So how defined or planned out is your career path there as a professional artist? Is it fuzzy? Can you describe it? Can you give us some detail on what the plan is?
Well, I definitely have ambitions. I don't know if I would use the word plan, just because I feel like I don't necessarily have a concrete idea of the parts that I can't control. So I definitely have the ambition to gain gallery representation and to have the ability to show my work in both a conventional space, in the gallery setting, and then also have that relationship forge, you know, future invitations like this one at Tower Hill to show in outdoor or in unconventional sites. So I often feel like I'm doing everything I believe I can to propel those ambitions. But I would have to say that as far as a plan goes, it is a little ambiguous or fuzzy, to use your word.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring this up. You know, you are helping us actually pilot the Business Accelerator program in its first year. And, you know, we're planning actually to build into the coming program, which, you know, the applications are open now. It's September. There's like 10 more days to apply, et cetera. But we're building into it some mentorship and the design of, by the end of the program, the fellows get a career path, professional plan with things they need to tick off, milestones that will get them closer to their actual business goals and to have very clearly defined goals. And we haven't built it in right now. And, you know, I actually think that we need to get you an hour with Elizabeth Hewlings, who is both founder of the fund, daughter of Clark Hewlings, and a business strategist in her own right with her own business strategy and business development company. So I don't know, I'm going to whisper a little thing or two in her ear and see what we can arrange, because I want you to have that. I want you to have a very clear idea of what you want, what the goal really is, and what milestones you'll have to check off to do that. So, and I just want to say to you,
that would be amazing.
I'm excited too that I'm saying this. So Elizabeth, if you're listening, I'll be speaking to you later.
We're both whispering
behind. Yeah, so exactly. But you know, you've done such a wonderful job in helping us pilot this. I'm going to look into it. Maybe we can accelerate that a bit. So let's ask you sort of the next question, which is, you know, many of your works, and this is about branding, many of your works, while they're primarily prints, they can take on sort of a sculptural tone. Is that, am I right about that? And is that an intention of sort of your branding, your uniqueness as a creative person?
Well, I think the point at which the work started to involve freestanding or sculptural pieces was in my MFA thesis show. And that was a point at which I started to become really fascinated with cinema as a language through which we experience the world, and trying to think about how I could create a cinematic effect without using moving image or without using video in my pieces. And so the first time I used freestanding sculptures, they were these sort of open trellis shapes that moved either in front of work and obscured it, or as you walked around them, they would reveal certain things. And I viewed that as kind of an allegory to a crossfade or, you know, a filmic transition. And so that's still how I, you know, tend to view
my sculptural pieces, as you know, this current work is called Ruin Sequence, and I use the word sequence in its cinematic form, so one thing coming after the next. And the way that these will be installed in the greenhouse, you will encounter them, you know, one at a time, and the order in which you encounter them will be sort of established by me, and for reasons that may or may not be apparent to a visitor. So yes, my move to sculpture was actually started with an interest in film.
Wow. So we have that in common. I'm a big independent film aficionado or fan anyway. So, let me ask you, your name is essentially tied then to, you know, we talked about it, the two artistic ventures, one the commercial setting and the other in fine art. From a branding perspective, do you feel like that one could dilute the other, or that you talked about it earlier, you said you're looking from a marketing perspective ways that one could contribute to the other, but I'm thinking more from the brand, the name Elizabeth Corkery. Do you think it'll dilute it to split it like that, or will it amplify and sort of raise it to an exponential level as you go forward?
I think that in having my own practice, it stands to enrich Print Club. I think having a business that's run by an artist that has, you know, a career in their own right beyond the work that they're making for that business only stands to, you know, raise the profile of the more commercial prints. I obviously have a different name for them. I don't call everything, you know, it's not all Elizabeth Corkery, but I am the founder of it, and I do identify myself as that. So I think, yeah, as I said, I think the two can enrich each other, and the fact that the production of the work on both ends increases the quality of both too, I think.
Okay, so Elizabeth, I have just three more questions. Unless you ask me something really interesting, I can't let go. Then I'm gonna lie and make another question. But so the first one on my mind is, you know, this is a non-art venue, and you talked about not having gallery representation, but obviously this is a major exhibition. This is a pivotal career move. So do you think that is going to become part of your brand identity? Are you planning to do or thinking about showing more of your works in non-art venues, sort of taking it out into the world?
Well, I would like to, because I think that so much of the research that I did around this new body of work was to do with the context of this greenhouse. I don't know if I would have had that point of departure or that sort of idea that piqued my interest if it was, you know, a more traditional white cube space that I was going to be making work for. So I'm energized, and my research and my development often gets kicked off by the site that I know the work will be in. So, you know, the piece I mentioned in Glasgow, I immediately started looking to buildings and gardens in Glasgow that I wanted to respond to. And, you know, similarly, the work I made in the UK was, hugely linked to garden design and garden history in the UK. So I always take as a point of departure either where the work's produced or where it will be displayed. And so to have unconventional sites only stands, you know, to benefit that thought process and that development.
Now, I'm going to wind down with just a few fun questions, but first I want to ask you one more about the exhibition. So what are you looking forward to most in finishing Ruin Sequence?
I'm actually really excited to document it. I think I'm going to shoot stills, but then also shoot some video of walking through the site, which isn't something I've done with projects in the past. So it's quite interesting. So many exhibitions now are experienced through their documentation. And so I always try to do something quite interesting with the process of documenting the work, because for a lot of people, that will be what they encounter rather than a visit to the Botanic Gardens. So I'm excited to get it documented.
Well, and as promised, one of our smiley questions, if you weren't an artist, what would you be?
You know, I actually answered this the other day to someone, and I think I would be a florist. I wanted to be one when I was young, although then my mom informed me of how early they have to get up to get to the markets. But I follow dozens of florists on Instagram, and obviously my love of plants sort of feeds into that interest. But I think in a world where I could maybe determine my own hours, I would do that.
Wow, that's not the answer I expected. So many people say, well, I can't imagine my life if I wasn't an artist. I wouldn't be able to do anything. You know, I'm stuck being an artist. It's destiny. But you're like, no, I know exactly what I'd do. I'd be a florist. That's really cool. I really like, especially with the Little Shop of Horrors that's currently eating all of your sculptural works as we speak because of the moisture. And, you know, I just want to give you nightmares over it. But I'm sure they will survive. Exactly. You've been listening to the Thriving Artist Podcast, a feature of the Clark Hulings Fund for Visual Artists. For more information on Elizabeth Corkery, visit elizabethcorkery.com. The Print Club Limited is at jointheprintclub.com. For more information on the Clark Hulings Fund and the Business Accelerator Fellowship Program, visit clarkhulingsfund.org. And be sure and follow our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening, and thank you, Elizabeth. It's been really great having you.
Thank you so much.